Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otto. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Ernesto Marinelli. Ernesto is a board member, a chief people officer, a board advisor, and digital transformation expert. He describes himself as a growth astronaut, a corporate entrepreneur, and a proud LGBTQ+ ally. His ambition growing up in a small village near Rome was to be a professor, but when studying linguistics to PhD level in Germany, a friend told him he was good at networking and should consider HR. This led to several roles in HR with increasing levels of responsibility until he reached the board of his current company, where he sits as chief people officer. Ernesto says there is a strong call for leadership today, more urgent than ever. Not leadership that dominates, but leadership that collaborates, that listens, that empowers, that values inclusion over conformity. Especially in times of seismic change, we need perspectives that embrace diversity rather than suppress it. Ernesto Marinelli, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Hi, Charlotte. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us. Ernesto, we're seeing suppression or backlash against diversity at all kinds of levels in society right now. And you're being very vocal about this on your social media channels. Why does this matter to you personally? And what can we all do about it?
So first of all, let me start by saying that I'm a proud gay man. I came out in 1989, so many years ago, and grew up in Italy in times in which that was not considered something that you should be proud of, if I can put it this way. And as well as I'm an immigrant, right? I migrated to Germany in 1989 with the intention, right, to continue my career, because I saw that as a gay man in Italy, I would not be able to pursue what I wanted to achieve as an individual, right? My ambition was to have a family with the men that I love, right? I did not have in mind who could be. Now I know who he is, right? But at that time, it was. And also, in terms of career, for me, it was important. I was very ambitious that I could continue and have a career. And in Italy, at that time, it was impossible. Either you had a double life, or you became, as a gay man, a hairdresser. And both options were not options for me. And therefore, this is important to me. And I think that the most important part, especially today when we are seeing, right, on one end, a little bit of a contradiction, because on one end you have immense technological shift, immense changes in our society. And on the other hand, you have politically speaking, right, some form of regression, right? People that are trying to bring us back into the future. And especially in those times, being proud and loud is very important. And I guess that this is what I'm trying to do and trying to be a role model for the people around myself. As you know, Charlotte, we discussed it a couple of times also from our time at SAP. Growing up, I had no role model. Being gay and being in a corporate environment, it was almost impossible back then. Not thinking about political role or even being a professor at the university. Thanks God, things have changed, and I think that I can be, in my small part of the world, right, a reference for people that are growing up now and thinking about, can I be who I am, right? Is there someone that has made it up? And if Ernesto made it, potentially I can make it myself as well.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful answer, because I should imagine now for kids becoming adults, seeing what's happening in the US, having that sense of suppression, seeing things going backwards, it must be scary. So it's really important for the adults around them to be loud and proud, as you are. And on that note, you recently wrote an open letter to the new Pope, Leo XIV, about his statements that a family can only exist between a man and a woman. And you said this denies the dignity of countless lives and realities. Must have been hard for you as a proud Italian to write a letter like that. Can you elaborate a little bit about what was going through your mind?
Well, you know, this is for many people, it was not a surprise that the Pope made such a statement, and they took it as for granted in a way. I exited the church in 2000, in the year 2000, when there was the first World Pride in Rome, and where the Pope was very irritated by that, the Pope Wojtyla at that time. In a statement at the Angelus on a Sunday, I think it was on a Sunday in July, during or after the Pride Month, said that love between two men or two women is a weak love. And I did not find myself recognized, and it was touching the dignity, especially because at that time I was already with my husband, already 7 years, and I found that our love was something else than weak. So I decided to exit the church. But at that time, right, it was more an act of personal pushback. It was not a political act. And I think now I've grown up. I am at an age where I think I can give back, right, to come to the set, to this point. And this was the reason why I thought to myself, it's time to react, right? If you try to minimize love to a dogma, it is a political but also a moral duty, right, as a citizen to say no to this. And this is what I have tried to do with that.
Yeah. Ernesto, you've been in HR, I'm going to guess, for about 25 years, am I right?
Absolutely.
And we've seen such an evolution of DEI. I mean, I think when you started, it probably wasn't even on the table. Then it was on the table. Then it became very official. We had chief DEI officers. Now it's contested. But the evolution of DEI continues. So what do you predict? What's the next stage?
Well, what I'm experiencing, and I have to say that this is so touching to me, what is happening. There are companies that are disinvesting from DEI. They are saying that there are no proofs that DEI make you more productive, which is dishonest, right? Because there are proofs that this is making us more productive. Belonging make us more productive. I think that it's I try to build a picture around that, right? It's like the last dinosaurs are trying to fight back to maintain their position, their privileges in our society, and they are doing that with all power that they have, as they find that at this stage, right, someone like Trump is giving them the permission to do that again, while potentially 20 years ago, this would have never been possible. And I think that on one end is sad. On the other hand, I understand that sometimes to lose privileges might be painful. And I think that this will change very soon because as a matter of fact, right, the world will continue with its progress, right? Companies need to innovate to survive. They cannot stand and think in a mythical world of the 60s or 70s, right, that everything is fine. And there will be a clash back. Companies, we see that every second day you hear about a company of the top 500, I am exaggerating a little bit, that are no longer part of that, right, because they are not surviving as the dinosaurs. And there are more and more companies that are emerging, that are innovative, that are in progress, right, that are embracing the change. And I think that this is what will create then pressure on the economies, right, to move ahead. In all times, in time of progress, there was more prosperity. As a matter of fact, right? So I think that we have to aim for prosperity and we have to aim for progress.
Yeah.
I am shocked of one thing, Charlotte, is that especially technology company, and technology company represent progress, right? So it's in their DNA that they are choosing for a conservative environment, which kills innovation and kills progress.
Yeah, it is completely shocking. And it's interesting to think about what are those elements of innovation that help companies progress and prosper. And you talked about being a digital transformation expert and a growth astronaut and a corporate entrepreneur. So let's talk a little bit about what genuine innovation looks like inside companies. You know, not only DEI and the people you have at the table, but what's the culture that we need to build?
Well, usually there are three elements that we need to consider. The first one is the openness, right? The curiosity, embracing curiosity, or a growth mindset, as many people talk about, right? As part of your DNA. The second element is that every idea is considered in a positive manner, where people can speak free, right? This this aspect of a safetiness, right, in the organization is very important as well, right? If you always feel under threat, you just try to conform and try to survive. And the best part that can happen is that you just move into the next company where you can thrive, right, and grow with the company. This is the second, I think, important element. And then the third element is that experimenting is something that, if it brings nothing in the end, is not considered as a defeat, but it's considered as a learning experience, right? And you move ahead. And I think that those three elements, if connected to that together, build a culture of innovation. If there is no innovation and there is no growth, right, as a matter of fact, it's no longer like it was, 100 years ago, right, where the context was always the same and company could survive for 200 years. Imagine now a company that are not embracing artificial intelligence. This is the next tectonic shift, we can say, right, that will happen. If they do not embrace this and they try to conserve, right, and stay in the past, they will be relevant very soon.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is that it's a culture that's incredibly the important foundation for innovation. And if we go back to what we were saying before, DEI is the culture. If you have a culture that supports diversity, you have a culture that supports curiosity, safety, and experimentation. The two go hand in hand.
So absolutely.
You take one of those away,
and everything breaks together, right?
Everything breaks. So you're saying without the diversity inherent in DEI, companies that call themselves innovative aren't going to be innovative anymore.
Absolutely. And I always say that the cost of the conservatism is so high, right, that will kill the bottom and top line of all companies, right? Because innovation requires progress. So it's like you're trying to steer in one direction where the growth is on the other direction. So it's as simple as that, right?
Yeah, it's like the serpent eating its tail, right?
Exactly, exactly. I will steal with pride this reference, right? Because at the end of the day, it is like this.
Yeah. Ernesto, you talked about AI, and I'd like to just grab that topic for a little bit. And you are a chief people officer. What are the three tips you have for HR leaders in terms of what's coming down the path in terms of AI and how they need to be thinking about it?
First, there are several elements. The first thing is to enter that with curiosity, right? I think that in the space of HR, but in the space of everybody in companies, right, we are encountering every day soul-crushing activities, right? Like writing reports, like writing reference letters, right? And I think that AI, just on this basic element, is such an enriching moment because this can help you to take out these soul-crushing activities so that you can focus more on business relevant activities, right? Like talent development, right? Which I think for the future is going to be even more key than ever because continuous learning is the life elixir of a company itself, instead of spending hours and hours in driving this stuff. So I think that curiosity will pay off in a very short time. The second element, of course, as every innovation, it brings some risk, right, to that. If we think about the fact that also artificial intelligence might have biases in it, right? And this is where empathy in this space becomes even more important. We should be in a way a filter, right, bringing our empathy into the game to see if humans who has built artificial intelligence brought their own bias to that, voluntary or involuntary. Let's leave it aside, right? This is one element that we have to think about. And in the meantime, thinking more and more about use cases that where they can leverage this. I think that this is actually artificial intelligence, as for all functions, but I think for HR in specifically, is going to bring such a huge advantage where we can bring to the table something that is at the core, that is important for us for the future, which is this combination of empathy with compassion and creativity, right? That brings then innovation for the future itself. And this is where we have to focus more instead of thinking about writing references letter or forwarding CVs. I was a former recruiter, right? And I remember how painful it was just the act of looking into the profile. Are they fulfilling the requirements? And then shift it manually at the beginning. So I'm talking about 25 years back, right? To the hiring managers to then look into that, etc., and then start the hiring process, right?
I'm so glad you mentioned empathy because I do think in all functions, AI replaces some of those repetitive tasks and leaves us free to be humans with empathy, with creativity, with our willingness to experiment. It sort of frees us up to be even more human
Absolutely,
than we
absolutely.
currently are.
This is our competitive advantage if you look into that, right? We have been doing tasks and this is not the first revolution we are experiencing, right? So we have been doing tasks that was not I like the expression soul crushing because it crushed your soul. It was if you think about people during the first industrial revolution being at the line and doing the same stuff, etc., etc., it becomes at one point, right? It kills your soul specifically, and we can get rid of that, right? This is so beautiful, actually. We should embrace that with a lot of love because this will make us more human, as you said.
Yeah. Ernesto, you were one of my interviewees for We Need New Leaders. And in that, we talked about your leadership journey. And you said that you learned that you had an aptitude for leadership when you were still an individual contributor, when you were leading without authority. What did you learn from that experience that you now take into your leadership career?
I think that one element that I learned at that time was that if you have an influence on others, right, because you have a purpose in mind of why you're doing stuff and you are collaborating with people and not imposing other people are doing are following your lead, right? If we can put it this way. I always say, and I'm not saying that because I'm humble, I was never the smartest guy in the room, but I was always the most empathic in the room. And I realized that being the most empathic, I was always the one that was able to get things done in a collaborative manner without having to enforce something that in the end brought half of the outcome or the quality of the outcome that you can get out of it. And that was quite impressive to me because I thought to myself, okay, it works like this. So when I became a leader, I thought to myself, I should not change the strategy. Why using my hierarchical power, right, if you will, to get things done? I would like to get them done through my purpose, right? And this is what I learned through that. And that's helped me through all my career still now.
And what is your leadership now to this day, sitting on a board as you do and representing the whole HR organization?
I am a collaborative leader. I like collaboration. I like involvement. I push back if I'm not involved in discussions because I think that everybody can in a way contribute. This is the way that I lead. And the second element is that I am an inclusive leader, right? Just triggered by the fact that I was excluded so many times that I liked always to listen to the person that is talking the less in the room. And this is the way that I'm leading. And you know, especially in these times where there is so much change and so much in such a pace, right, that is unprecedented, and it will be even more in the future. What we recognize is that collaboration become a key strategic skill for the future. Why, potentially, you are asking yourself? Because I think that as a singular person, as a single contributor, we cannot solve the complexity of the problems that are encountering us today. So the collective brain of everybody is what helps us to do so, right? I think that we are experiencing the fact that Taylorism, as it was thought through 150 years ago, is dying, right? It's like a dinosaur that is still trying to move around the world, but is dying as well. And in the future, collaboration will become key. And collaboration does not work without any inclusive spirit, because then you're not collaborating. Either you're imposing or everybody's doing their things in their own. And this is the way that I built also my vision for Arion. I said, I would like to make Arion an inclusive ecosystem and collaborative ecosystem in which we can leverage the brain of everybody in the company to solve the most complex problem of our customers with technology. And all the activities that I'm doing, I'm trying to do that in this spirit and this thought. And I always think about that in three pillars, right? One is to build a collaborative work environment. I think that this is important, where everybody has the opportunity to share their vision, to speak up, right, to bring their contribution to the table. The second element is to foster an employee success. We talk a lot about, especially in the software industry, about customer success, but customer success, it starts with employee success, and that the foundation of employee success is continuous learning and continuous feedback. And of course, to build or forge an inclusive culture. So those are the elements that, or the pillars of my vision of having a collaborative and inclusive ecosystem in every company that I will be working for.
I love that, Ernesto. And as you spoke about employee success, that really touched something in me because, you know, we work together, HR and communications at SAP, and there was always that talk about employee engagement, and nobody really wanted to hold the hot potato. You know, the senior leaders of the company, oh, no, no, it should be comms, oh, no, no, it should be HR. Nobody wanted to hold employee engagement. Continues to be a challenge for every single organization. But if you focus on employee success, I mean, if I'm successful as an employee, of course I'm engaged.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is at the core, right, of everything. I do not like all this old-fashioned patriarchal talking around performance. Performance is a process. What we have to focus more and more is about the outcome. And the outcome is the success, right? There is no question around that. And, you know, the problem why performance management, as we call it in the past, and there are companies that I'm not mentioning here that are going back to this old-fashioned employee ranking, et cetera, did not work out, was triggered by the fact that they were focusing on a process and not an outcome. And I think that this is the shift, in my view, that we have to take into consideration, where success becomes critical for organization. It is critical for organization, and they do not care. So performance in itself is the process how to get there. But this process can change, and it will change every day now with artificial intelligence. Is the quality of an article that you write, Charlotte, as a communication executive, less valuable than if it's done through ChatGPT, or is done still on paper and with a pen?
So, Ernesto, I love that you talked about outcomes, because what I'm seeing with the new generations in the workplace. So, for instance, my kids are Gen Z; they are starting to enter the workplace now. It doesn't matter to them if they do the work at 9 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock at night. They might have gone for a walk in the day, gone and had a coffee with their friends, but they still deliver a perfect piece of work on the deadline. It doesn't matter how they got there. And so I think this focus on outcomes, this focus on employee success, this moving away from top-down command and control actually matches the needs of the new generations who are arriving at work.
And this is logically, if you think about that in itself, right? How will you get there? When you get there, it doesn't make sense. I think that these are also these old-fashioned discussion around return to the office. It's still a way of the dinosaurs to keep things, to conserve things as they were. The world has moved on, right? And I think that we have to focus on that. We can accept it or not, right? But progress always wins. Always, because it brings more growth, it brings more margin, it brings more success for everybody. And prosperity is something that as humans, right, we are always aiming for. So if I can speak out, let's stop trying to keep things as they are, or living in the myth that things in the past were always better. They were not better. They weren't, right?
They just weren't.
it's a matter of fact, right? There were people dying for diabetes, right? Still 100 years ago, right? Till they found insulin. So the future is always brighter.
Well, I mean, that's my inspiration for sure for writing We Need New Leaders, is that the future is brighter. We need the leaders who are ready to step up and lead in a new way. Not command and control, not top down, not hierarchies, but collaboration, empathy, purpose, values, all the things that you've been talking about. And we shift a little bit now to you personally, Ernesto. How do you think about your own reputation?
I think that this is important because reputation is important for everybody, right? If you do not mind about your reputation, you do not mind about yourself. And the reputation is, I look at that as a mix, right, as a cocktail of several aspects. On one end, at the core is your identity. This is who you are, your background, where you're coming from, et cetera, et cetera. On the other hand, are your skills, your competencies, your compassion, your ability to empathize with others, right, as a leader. So this is part of that. And of course, is also what you have achieved over the course of the last many years. And someone has 3 years of experience, someone is learning now to walk still, right? It does not matter. Everything adds to that. And this creates your reputation. And your reputation helps you also to be a role model for others, right? To impact others, to be a reference, so that others can always aim towards something, right? I always remember a couple of interviews that I had at SCP with women that they were telling me, Ernesto, you still do not have anybody in the board. I'm talking 20 years ago or so, that you still do not have any board member as a female. Who should I aim for? And I remember that someone said, you know, it's like when you're playing basketball and you are the only one that it's 1 meter 60 and the others are all 2 meters, and you're asking yourself, will I ever put the ball into the basket? And I really liked this, because everybody needs a reference, because otherwise you will always think, you will always make yourself smaller, right? The stretch comes also from reference, not the only thing. And I think that this is part of also what makes reputation, what I always try to represent around that. There is one element that potentially nobody talk about is vulnerability. I like to talk about my shortcomings, and I've made part of my shortcomings part of my brand, of my reputation itself, because it feels more authentic, right? It feels more me. And I do not want that something is representing something that it does not is what it is. And I can tell you, potentially many people think, why is this so important? And there is a small thing that triggered that to me. You know, when I was a kid, of course, I had the impression that my parents loved me a lot, but they loved me because they thought potentially that I was an heterosexual man, right? The moment in which I was able to tell them that I was gay, it was on the first hand also to see, do they still love me for who I am, or they loved someone that they thought or envisioned that it was. And in that moment, when I realized that they still loved me, or continue to love me, not still love me, but they continue to love me, was the moment in which I realized that being vulnerable is also always a way to check if people are accepting you who you are. And if they are not, it's okay. Let's move on, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was Brené Brown who said vulnerability is strength. And she has all these vulnerability exercises for leaders and leadership teams, which maybe I wish I'd seen more of in my career. So my passion, as you know, with We Need New Leaders is to change what we've been talking about, which is that old leadership archetype, that thing in our head that tells us loud, overconfident, controlling, masterful is what a leader is, and move towards this more collective, collaborative, outcome-focused, value-driven type of leadership that we've been talking about today. What can we do collectively, but also individually, to change that archetype?
I always look at the development of collaboration along two coordinates, right? Because it's easier. On one end is the purpose, and on the other end is the liberty, the freedom that you have to get somewhere. And if you think back in the past, and this is the way that I always try to stretch myself, at the beginning of when leadership emerged, right, potentially already during the Romans military, I assume, right? It was more or less command and control. Low level of purpose, or zero purpose, we can say, right? And zero level of liberty or freedom, right? On how you can do autonomously thing. I think that in the last 30 to 40 years, we realized that this does not work. And we moved into a more, let's say, higher purpose and liberty, in a status in which we would say, which is coach and promote. And what I mean by that is coaching someone to become even better, reflecting back and mirroring back what they are doing and doing it better, and promote the great work that they are doing. I think that this will not work any longer in the future. Why? Because this coaching element, which is still important, is triggered by your experience. But your experience will not always help you to help others to become better, right? Because while in the past changes happened in a less rapid mode, today it happens so fast, right? Who had ever thought potentially 30 years back to talk about reverse mentoring. No one, right? I remember always the fact that when I came to Germany, they were talking about apprenticeship. There was not this system in Italy. And I remember always asking, what is the apprentice, right, doing? And they were saying, oh, he's picking up the beer. So what they meant, right, in this joke was that they are doing the most simple stuff. At that time, no one would have ever thought about reverse mentoring. Today, people are bringing completely new skills into the game, right? You were talking about your kids. They are much more mature and they bring much more perspective into the game as potentially generations before. And I think that this is this changing element of leadership where you can no longer foster on that. And I think that the next generation of leader, and we mentioned already that is high purpose, high autonomy or freedom, right? Which is triggered by collaborate and trust, right? So those are the new coordinate of a leader. Collaborate in terms of trying to work together on the purpose, right, which trigger us as a team, and potentially being a reference and a role model still. Coach where possible, but where it's impossible, just trust, right, that the outcome is the ultimate game, right, and this is where they have to focus on. And I guess this is a fundamental shift. Because people like also, in a way, especially in a patriarchal society as ours, to have this control, to have this power, had some privileges connected to that. In the future, we will lose those privileges. It will become more democratic, right? And this democratization of everything will ensure that potentially leadership role will no longer have the same how do you say, benefits, right, potentially as they had in the past, they have other benefits, right? And these new benefits needs to be defined and determined so that it still remain an element that is required. But the leadership is going to be more related to how do I create an environment, right, that is able to collaborate? How can I build trust? How can I build belonging? This is going to be the new role of leaders. And this is where it comes compassion into the game, right? That without compassion as a leader in the future, you will not be so successful as potentially you were in the past. You were with me at SAP. You remember many, many years ago, we were talking about high potentials, right? And I still remember that there was one element or one of the definitions or the elements that made a high potential was the intellectual horsepower, right? And I always found this word funny because it sounded strange to me as an Italian, although I understood what it was behind that. Today, potentially, we have to talk about the emotional or the horsepower, right? Or the compassional horsepower because the intellectual horsepower will be triggered by the artificial intelligence itself. So the differentiator of us, right, for the future, right, our competitive advantage will be more on the social and emotional competencies in the spectrum of the emotional and the social competencies for the future. Does this answer your question? I don't know if I lost myself in talking with passion about that because I'm very passionate about this shift.
No, you didn't lose me and you didn't lose your thread. I've got pictures in my head and I love the vision of the world that you've described to me, and I'm going to repeat it back to you to make sure that I understand. So the old patriarchal world is like an apex and the leader is at the top, and that's command and control. Then we've had this sort of era of coach and promote, which as you were talking about, that felt parental to me. So it still felt top down. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, I'll coach you, you'll get better. And we're moving to more of a collaborative matrix where it's not about climbing on top of each other's heads to get to the top. It's how do we shepherd but also grow emotional competencies, because the technology is going to be doing the intellectual horsepower work, and we are the humans collaborating to innovate and improve society and business. So it's a beautiful picture you paint, Ernesto. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, right? And I think that this is what is what is going to solve the most complex problem of our customers, right? If you're a company, or if you're in a government of your citizens, right? To solve the most complex problem of our citizens as well. So this is where leadership play a role. And if you look now at the references, look at about countries like Canada. For me, it's a lighthouse, right, of inclusion on one end, but it's more becoming more and more also a reference of economic success, right? While on the other hand, the US is becoming more and more the dinosaurs of world economies that is trying to survive, right, but with a lot of challenges, right, because they are using old methodologies to trying to go back to the past instead of staying to moving into the future.
Yeah, and that takes us so neatly back to our conversation right at the beginning, which was about diversity, and that this pushback at the moment is an attempt to reclaim power. It's going to fail because the movement is so strong towards innovation, development, change generated by AI that world is changing whether people like it or not. Yeah. Ernesto, now we go to the three standard questions I always ask. Give us a book recommendation.
A book recommendation. Well, your book for sure, right? And I'm not saying that I have it here on my table. I received it just a couple of days back. Wait a second. I put it here. We need new leaders. Thank you for sending me. I have to admit I haven't read it through that, but I remember our conversation on that. And if everybody that has contributed has had a similar nice experience with that, was an amazing experience for all of that. And I'm not saying that, Charlotte, to make publicity of your book, but because I think that if there is something that I also think is important is we need new leaders. If you look at the reality, look at Meloni in Italy, Orban in Hungary, and I'm not talking about in the economic world, right, or corporate environment, because I might mention people that we know and I do not want to. Those are all leaders that potentially will not have a future because they are so attached to the past that they will miss the train. And therefore, if there is something that is really, really important, is these new leaders. Leaders that are able to enable an environment of collaboration, right? And trust each other. In Germany, Charlotte, we say, trust is good, but control is better. This is also something that is linked in the past, right? I think that today, obviously that control is good, but trust is better. And I think that this is what we need more for the future.
Oh, that's beautiful. And also, thank you for the shout out for we need new leaders. I appreciate that. My passion is to help emerging leaders who come from underrepresented minorities, diverse backgrounds, diverse identities, to land, keep, or create their dream leadership roles. What tips do you have for new leaders who have ambitions?
So, first of all, what made me successful, right? I nothing spoke for me when I came here. I was a migrant. I was a gay migrant, right? In an environment that where being Italian was still not as positive as potentially became afterwards. When I came here, there were still guest workers. And I always tell this story that the people were encountering me and there were always two questions that I received. The first question was, in which pizzeria did you learn German? And the second question was, what is the mafia? How is the mafia doing? So those were the two questions that I received. And in a way, at that time, I I found it funny, although it was not so funny because I always thought, okay, I will prove you that it's not only about spaghetti and mafia in Italy. And then mid of the 90s, right, towards the beginning of 2000, people started looking at Italy more with the lens of Versace, Dolce & Gabbana. Those were emerging leaders. And here in Germany, people started having more and more an interest for fashion. And then they were talking more about this, more about Tuscany, more about the Italian food, but not from the lens of the small pizzeria around the corner. And this has created a completely new brand that has also given me the opportunity to continue to develop. And I always say, so one thing is that having an ally is important. I had a lot of allies in my life, and they helped me to develop people that believed in me despite all the inadequacies, right? They were connected with my personality. And I'm talking about inadequacies compared to the reference of, let's say, the majority. This is an important element. Be authentic. If you spend a lot of energy trying to adapt to other people's standards, this energy is used for something that is useless. Be authentic and be yourself. If you realize this is not the culture you like to be in, just move on, right? As a matter of fact, it does not make a difference, right? This is a second important element. And the third element is that there will be always situations in which you will not succeed, right? Sometimes you do not get the next promotion. Sometimes you do not get the next job that you were aiming for. Please do not think that is triggered by the fact that you are potentially a so-called diverse candidate. Just learn from that and move on. I think that those are the three elements that helped me a lot to survive. So having allies that believed in me, this gave me a lot of strength, right? The aspect of not wasting a lot of energy in being something else, but I used the energy to perform. And then, of course, to move on, right, and learn from potential failures. Everybody will not get a job, independently if they are part of the majority or not. We do not have to bring it back to something that potentially it's our strength. And I always say, at the end, the fact that I'm a gay migrant, this is a huge strength that helped me to become the person that I am today, right? I would not be Ernesto the way that I am without those elements. Potentially, I will be something that is not so special as I found myself to be, as everybody's special, by the way, right?
Well, we love you the way you are, Ernesto. And
Thank
last
you.
question, what brings you joy?
My family, my dog, time on the beach, my running in the morning, right? Those are the small things that bring me joy.
We're appreciating the small things and we're appreciating you, Ernesto. Thank you so much for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.